The fifth Parida in our collection is called Mora Sutta. Mora Sutta means peacock sutta, peacock discourse or peacock protection. This protection was used by the Bodhisattva who was reborn as a peacock. So this came to be known as Peacock Sutta. Here we should know something about Bodhisattvas. According to the teachings of Theravada Buddhism, Bodhisattva is a person who makes an aspiration for Buddhahood in the presence of a Buddha, and then declared by that Buddha that he, the aspirant, would become a Buddha in the future. So only a person who gets the declaration from a living Buddha that he will become a Buddha in the future is accepted as a Bodhisattva in Theravada Buddhism. The meaning of the word Bodhisattva is a being attached to enlightenment as a Buddha. So a being, a person who wants to become a Buddha. And after getting the declaration from a Buddha, a Bodhisattva must fulfill the necessary qualities in order to become a Buddha. And he has to fulfill these necessary qualities for a very long time, for billions and billions of eons, not just billions of lives, but billions of eons. According to Theravada teachings, Bodhisattvas are still unenlightened persons. So Bodhisattvas are not Sotapannas, not Sakadagamis, not Anagamis, and not Arahants. they are still worldlings. Since they are unenlightened, they are subject to rebirth in what are called four woeful states. So they can be reborn as animals, or they can be reborn as human beings, or deities, or dharmas. And the possibility of their being reborn as animals is because they have accumulated in their past lives both good karma and bad karma. Sometimes bad karma gets chance to give results, and so as a result of some bad karma, a Bodhisattva may be reborn as an animal. And Bodhisattvas have to fulfill the necessary qualifications, which are called paramis, and they are 10 in number, according to teachings in Theravada Buddhism. And the Bodhisattvas try to fulfill the 10 qualifications of paramis to the utmost. That means when they fulfill the parami of dana, giving, they will give whatever they have without leaving anything behind, or they will give part of their bodies if somebody asks for them, or they may even give up their lives. So, and when they practice Dana Parami, they do not wish for abundant results, but they do not wish for pleasures of the world, but they always make a wish that this punya, this kusala, may lead me to the attainment of omniscience, that means to the attainment of Buddhahood. So the only thing they aimed at when they did meritorious deed is Buddhahood, or attainment of omniscience. That contains Visparita. Our Bodhisattva was born as a peacock in the forest near the Himalaya mountains. Now, although Bodhisattvas are unenlightened beings, they are not ordinary beings. They are extraordinary beings, and so wherever they are reborn, they excel other beings in their good qualities. So here, our Bodhisattva was born as a peacock, and it is said that he was of golden color, and he lived in the forest near the Himalaya mountains, and he did not go near where human beings live for his safety. And every morning when the sun rose, he would look at the sun and then pay homage to the sun, and then pay homage to the Buddha and the enlightenment. And this is his protection for the day. So after seeing, paying homage to the sun and the Buddha and Buddha's qualities, he would go about looking for food. And in the evening also, when the sun went down, he would look at the sun and again pay homage to the sun and to the Buddha, Buddhas, and to the enlightenment. And only after doing this protection did he go to sleep. So in this way, the Bodhisattva, the peacock Bodhisattva, lived in the forest. Although the golden peacock lived deep in the forest, one day a hunter happened to be in that area and saw the golden peacock. So when he got back home, the hunter told his son about the golden peacock. Now, one day, the king of Benares had a dream, and in her dream she saw the golden peacock, and she listened to the Dhamma talk given by the golden peacock. So when she woke up, she wanted to see the golden peacock and wanted to listen to the Dhamma talk. And so she asked the king to bring the peacock to the city. So the king asked his courtiers about the golden peacock, and the courtiers did not know. Then he asked his Brahmins, and they said, there is a golden peacock. But when asked where, they did not know. And they said, hunters may know. So the king called all hunters and asked about the golden peacock, and that son of the hunter said he knew where the golden peacock was. So the king sent him to catch the golden peacock. So he went to the forest and set the snare to catch the golden peacock. But golden peacock always did his protection at the beginning of the day and end of the day, so that he was unable to catch the peacock. So even though the peacock may step into the snare would not close up with its head. So he tried it for 7 years, and then the hunter died. Now, when the hunter died and did not get the peacock, the queen also did not get to see the peacock, and so the queen died. So when the queen died, the king was furious, and so he had an inscription made on a plate of gold saying, there is a golden peacock in the Himalayas forest, and whoever eats the flesh of that golden peacock, will enjoy eternal youth and immortality. He was angry with the peacock, and so he said that is not true. So that by some means or by some person, the peacock would be killed. After the death of the king, there was another king, and he also, after reading the inscriptions, sent the hunter to catch the golden peacock, and he was also unable to catch it. And so it went on for the time of 6 kings. So 6 kings came and went, and 6 hunters were sent to the forest to catch the golden peacock, but they were unable to catch it. Now during the time of the 7th king, the hunter was again sent to catch the golden peacock. And this hunter was maybe smart, because he tried to find out why the snare was not closed, even though the golden peacock stepped into the snare. And he found out that the golden peacock made the protection every day. So he caught a peahen and taught her to dance and to utter a cry. And so one day, early morning, before the golden peacock made his protection, he set the peahen and let her utter a cry. So when the golden peacock heard the cry of a female, desire arose in his heart, and so he set aside making protection and went near the peahen. So now he was off guard. So when he approached the peahen, he stepped into the snare and he was caught in the snare. So the hunter got hold of him and then brought him to the city. So when the king saw the golden peacock, he was very happy. And so he put the peacock on a place. Then the peacock asked the king why he was made to be caught. Then the king said, those who eat your flesh become eternally youthful and immortal, and so I want to enjoy eternal youth and immortality, and that is why I had you caught. Then the peacock asked, let it be true that those who eat my flesh will become immortal. But will I die? And the king said, of course you will die. Then the Bhikkhu said, if I am to die, or if I have the nature to die, how can my flesh produce immortality? So this is not true. Then the king said, it is because you are of golden color. So he was an extraordinary peacock, and he had a golden color. So the king thought that the gold metal it represents immortality, and so the blood which has a golden color will give immortality. So he said, because you are of golden color. Then the peacock said, the fact that I am of golden color is the result of what I did in the past. In one of my life in the past, I was a world king. And at that time, I kept 5 precepts myself and encouraged all people to keep 5 precepts. So as a result of that good karma, I was reborn as a deva for some time, and then as a result of another bad karma, I was reborn as a peacock now. And the king said, how can we believe you that you are a world king and that you get the golden color because of your karma in the past? Where is the evidence? He asked. Then the bhikkhu said, when I was a universal king, I live here in this very city, and I used to go through the air in a chariot. And that chariot lies buried in the ground underneath the waters of the Royal Lake. So if you dig that up, you will find that chariot. So the king joined the lake and then dug up the chariot, and he found the chariot. So he believed what the golden peacock said. So the golden peacock said, great king, accept nibbana, which is everlasting. There is nothing in the among the conditioned phenomena that is substantial and that lasts forever. And then he talked Dhamma to the king and made the king take 5 precepts. And then the king was pleased with him, and so he stayed at the palace for some days, and then he left. So before he left, he gave a parting advice to the king, and that was apamade na sambhadehi. So be not heedless. So he went back to the forest and hoped he will not forget to say his he would not forget to say his protection. Now the protection, or the formula of protection, are made by the golden peacock. So when the sun rose, he looked at the sun from a hill and then said, "This sign which gives eyes to the creatures to see, which is the Supreme King, which is gold in color, and which shines all over the earth, rises. I pay respect to that sign, which is gold in color and which shines all over the earth." Then he said, "Being protected by you, we will live safely the whole day." And then he paid homage to the Buddha, saying, "I pay homage to those Buddhas who have understood all dhammas, and may they protect me. Let there be homage to the Buddhas. Let there be homage to enlightenment. Let there be homage to those who have become free from mental defilements. Let there be homage to the deliverance from mental defilements." And then the peacock said, the Buddha said, "That peacock made this protection and then went about looking for food." And in the evening when the sun went down, the golden peacock looked at the sun from the hill and then again paid homage to the sun, saying the same thing. Only the difference is, at the end he said, "Being protected by you, we will live safely the whole night." And then he paid homage to the Buddhas, the enlightenment, those who have become free, and homage to deliverance from mental defilement. And then the Buddha said, "That peacock made this protection and then went to sleep. Protection from being caught in the snare, and protection for our safety." And when I was young, I met one couple who followed the example of the golden peacock. So every day at sunrise and at sundown, they would look at the sun, folded their hands towards the sun, and then recited these verses. So they did it with conviction, with confidence, and they said they enjoy safety from the robbers and others as a result of this protection. It may be true or it may be not, but they are confident that they are safe from being robbed and others because of this protection. And there are some people, especially some monks, who do not want to say the first verse because the first verse pays homage to the sun. So worshipping the sun is not really a Buddhist practice, and so they don't want to say that. But these verses were preached by the Buddha, and so they are mixed with the words of the Buddha here. So if the Buddha reported these verses, I don't think we should feel uncomfortable about saying these verses. Although we may not, especially monks, may not worship the sun, we are just saying what the golden peacock said for his protection. And so I don't think we should feel uncomfortable about that. And from this story, I think we learn one thing. Now, the golden peacock made this protection for many, many years, and the hunters were unable to catch him. But just once, he forgot to say the protection, and then he was caught in the snare. So please note that you have to do it every day. Not just one shot of like injection, and then you get free from disease forever. So you have to do it every day so that you are protected. Now the next protection also is of the Bodhisattva born as a quail, born as a bird. And this time it was the forest fire, which was stopped by the power of the truth saying of the Bodhisattva. Now in this story, Bodhisattva was reborn as a quail, and it was very young at that time. It had no wings yet, and also it could not walk. So at that time, there came a great forest fire. So when the forest fire came, all animals ran away, all birds ran away, and his parents, birds also went away, leaving him alone. So he was looking at the fire coming towards him, and first he did not know what to do. And then later he remembered that there were good qualities in the world, truthfulness, the Dharma in the world, truthfulness, morality, purity, loving kindness, and compassion. And so, thinking of those qualities, he made an asseveration of truth. That means he stated something which is true, and he tried to stop the fire by that utterance of truth. And the truth he said was, I have wings, but I cannot fly. I have feet, but I cannot walk. My mother and my father have left me. Oh, forest fire, go back. Just back. So it was true that he had wings, but he could not fly. He had feet, and he could not walk. And his mother and father had left him. So just saying this. This truth, he said this truth reflecting upon the good qualities in the world, and also reflecting upon the Buddhas in the past. So as soon as I have made this asseveration, the great flames of the fire avoided me from 16 measures, maybe 16 acres or something, like a fire coming to the water. There is nothing equal to my truthfulness. So this is my perfection of truthfulness. So this is the truthfulness which is perfect, which was done by a quail, but a quail, not an ordinary quail. It is the Bodhisattva himself, and so the fire stopped from a distance. And when it stopped like a fire coming to the water. Now this story was related by the Buddha on two occasions. The first was when Buddha went to a forest with monks, and then there was a forest fire, and the monks were afraid, and so they tried to kindle a counter fire. But at that time, the other monk said, we have the Buddha with us, and Buddha was a very powerful being, and by his power, we can be saved. Why not go to the Buddha? So they all go to the Buddha, and Buddha went to a spot, some particular spot, and with monks, stayed there. And the fire, which was running all around, stopped at the distance of 16 measures. So the mantra cleared, and then the disciple was unable to reach him, and so on. And then Buddha said, the fact that fire stopped was not my power in this life, but it is the power of the utterance of truth I made when I was reborn as a quail, and then related this story. And then Buddha said that that place where the fire did not come, or fire did not burn, will endure for the whole of the world, or to the end of the world, and no fire will burn on that spot. So there are some things like that, the miracles that will endure to the end of the world, and this is one of them, that spot will never be burnt by fire. If we know the exact spot, we might go there and stay there. The second occasion was when the Venerable Sariputta requested the Buddha to relate how he fulfilled his parami. And Buddha related the stories where he fulfills different paramis, and so this is one of them. And this second occasion is referred to in the introductory verses in this collection. Now today's two paradas involve animals, birds, and so these may lead us to thinking whether it is really possible for the animals being capable of such thoughts, capable of doing paraja, capable of remembering the Buddhas, capable of understanding the Dhamma, and so on. Now, these the animals are not ordinary animals, they are the bodhisattvas, the bodhisattva born as a peacock and a quail. And when these stories happen, bodhisattva has fulfilled many of the paramis, and he had seen and he had met many Buddhas in the past. He had fulfilled the parami of giving, of truthfulness, of loving kindness, of affirmation, and so on. And so he, Bodhisattva was a mature being in these stories, although he was reborn as an animal. So we cannot say that these animals are not capable of such thoughts. Sometimes we don't know that animals can think in this way. But since the Bodhisattva was a highly evolved person, I think they may be able to think in this way. They are capable of making such utterance of truth, and so on. So, with confidence in the Buddha and his teachings, his omniscience and his compassion, we may make use of these protective chantings, and at least we can get a sense of safety, and we can get some benefit from using these protective chantings to bless new houses We chant a number of sutras from this collection. And the other monk at the monastery, Sarasvana, always included this sutra. But I told him in joke, we don't need to recite this sutra because we have high insurance. So now about the practice. Now every yogi experiences drowsiness or sleepiness at one time or another. And some can get rid of it easily, but others have some difficulty. So tonight I would like to pass on to you the methods given by the Buddha to the Venerable Mahamoggallana. When the Venerable Mahamoggallana was sleepy when practicing meditation.
Yes.
You know, the Venerable Mahamoggallana was the second chief disciple of the Buddha, and the first chief disciple was the Venerable Sariputta. So these two Venerables became Sotapanna on the same day. They were first friends. And after they became Sotapanna, they went to the Buddha and they got ordination there. And after they got ordination, they went to different places to practice meditation. So Sariputta went to one place and Moggallana went to another place. Now it is said in the commentary that the Venerable Moggallana was practicing walking meditation for 7 days. So when he practiced walking meditation for 7 days, he became tired. And so when he sat down and practiced sitting meditation, he became sleepy and he was nodding like this. So Buddha knew this or saw this from his place, and so Buddha went to him and then ask him, "Are you nodding, Moggallana? Are you nodding?" Now with Buddha, there is no equivocation. You just say yes or no. So Moggallana said, "Yes, Bhante." And then Buddha gave him the seven methods for getting rid of drowsiness or sleepiness. The first method Buddha gave was, Buddha said, "Well then, Moggallana, at whatever thought drowsiness befalls you, to that thought you should not give attention and not dwell on that thought." So that means if you think of something and then you feel sleepy thinking of that thing, then do not think of that thing. Do not take that object as object. So by leaving that thought or that object and taking another a new thought or object, it is possible that drowsiness will vanish. Now the second one, Buddha said, "But if by doing so drowsiness does not vanish, then you should reflect upon the teaching as you have heard and learned it. You should ponder over it and examine it closely in your mind." So that means you may have learned something of the teachings, and then you think of those teachings and you should ponder over it, that is, think about it and examine it closely in your mind. So in that, by doing so, it is possible that drowsiness will vanish. So the second method is to think of something you have learned about the Dharma and reflect upon it or think about it, examine it. The third is, if by doing so drowsiness does not vanish, then you should repeat in detail the teaching you have heard or learned it. So you may have learned something by heart, you may have memorized some teachings, and if there are some such teachings, then you repeat those teachings in detail. Now, repeating can be done silently or aloud, but repeating aloud is not suitable when you are practicing with other people. So if you are alone, say you may say aloud what you have learned, but if other people, then you may repeat it to yourself. So by repeating in detail the teaching you have learned, you may be able to get rid of drowsiness. The fourth method. If by doing so drowsiness does not vanish, then you should pull both earlobes and rub your limbs with your hands. Now this also may not be suitable in a crowd, but you can pull your ears. So if you pull your ears hard, but hard enough, then you will become alert again. So it is the advice of the Buddha. So Buddha advised his disciples to pull their earlobes when they feel sleepy. So you may pull your both earlobes and then rub your limbs with your hand like this. And by doing so, it is possible that drowsiness will vanish. The fifth method is you should get up from your seat, and after washing your eyes with water, you should look around in all directions and upwards to the stars and constellations. Now it is for those who practice at night. So if you still have drowsiness, then you get up and then put some cool water in your eyes and then look around and look up to the stars and constellations. So if you do so, you will become alert and then you can practice meditation. The sixth method is, if by doing so drowsiness does not vanish, you should give attention to the perception of light, to the perception of daylight. Thus, with your mind clear and unclouded, you should cultivate a mind that is full of brightness. That means you imagine seeing a bright light. Now when you see, really see the bright light, sleepiness will go away. So here, you perception of light means you imagine seeing a very bright light, even if it is night, you consider it to be daylight and try to see bright light in your eyes. So by cultivating a mind full of brightness, that is, imagining seeing a very bright light, it is possible that drowsiness will vanish. Now the seventh and the last method. So if by doing so drowsiness does not vanish, then with your senses turned inward and your mind not straying outward, you should take to walking up and down, being aware of going to and fro. So that means you get up and practice walking meditation. So when you practice walking meditation, you turn your senses inward. You do not look here and there. You do not listen to sounds and noises, but keep your mind inward and not let your mind stray outward. You practice walking meditation, walking up and down. So these are the seven methods given by the Buddha for getting rid of drowsiness or sleepiness. I think Buddha was aware that a yogi might be very tired, and even these seven methods may not be effective. So As a last resort, Buddha said, if by doing so drowsiness does not vanish, you may mindfully and clearly aware lie down. You may lie down like a lion, that means on your right side. On your right side and placing foot to foot like this and keeping in mind the thought of arising, that means I will get up again. But keeping in mind that thought, and when you wake up on awakening, you should quickly get up, thinking, I must not indulge in the pleasure of resting and reclining in the pleasure of sleep. So this is just surrendering to the sleepiness. So if you are really sleepy, if you try the seven methods given above and you still cannot get rid of sleepiness, it means you are really tired and your body really needs sleep. And so you lie down. But Buddha did not say, go to sleep here. So you lie down and then rest for a while. But he said, on awakening, so you may go to sleep a little. But before taking the rest, keep in mind the thought of arising. That's very important. I will get up as soon as I am rested or something like that. So, and then when you awake, then you should quickly get up and thinking, I must not indulge in the pleasure of resting or reclining. I must not indulge in the pleasure of sleep. So you quickly get up and continue your practice of meditation. So I hope you remember the seven methods. The first is not to think of the thought which causes sleepiness. And the second, reflect upon the teaching you have learned. The third, repeating the teaching you have learned. The fourth, pulling your ears. And the fifth, getting up, washing your face, and looking up at the stars and constellations. And the sixth, imagining seeing a bright light. And the seventh, getting up and practice walking meditation. And also, we also recommend, first, when you experience sleepiness, just be mindful of sleepiness, or make notes of sleepiness as sleepy, 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 sleepy. And you may become alert again. And if you cannot get rid of sleepiness that way, then try noting, say, four or five things at one time. That means, say, you have touching points in your body, so touching, 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 sitting, touching, 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 sitting, and so on. So by that way, you may be able to get rid of sleepiness. Now, if you still feel sleepy, then you may open your eyes and practice. Now, if that doesn't help, you may stand up and practice while standing. And if that doesn't help again, you practice walking meditation. Or you may put some cold water in the eyes. And again, at last, if all fails, then just go lie down and take some rest. Okay, may you be able to get rid of sleepiness by these methods or by one or more of these methods, and practice meditation and get the benefits.